percent.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me?
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Are you there?
We gotta get rid of this coop. I got an idea.
Greatness at its finest.
Welcome to the Rodcast.
Wonder who that could be.
With Rod Babers and Patrick Davis.
Come on, why you want to play a brother like that?
Is there a problem back there?
HornFM.com and on the Horn app. The Horn, where Austin talks sports.
Welcome back to the Rodcast, as we like to call it, the hump day edition of the Rodcast. That's right, folks. We got a lot to get into. Actually, yeah, it's the holiday kind of edition of it as well. Last show of the week before we get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday. So happy Thanksgiving, early Thanksgiving to everybody out there. We'll talk about Thanksgiving because a lot of football, of course, that's what Thanksgiving is all about. Family, football, and fantastic food. We'll talk about all of those things, but also talk about a lot about the football happening on Thursday, but also we'll get into a lot of the football happening this weekend, this holiday weekend. The Longhorns will rekindle their rivalry with Texas A&M, so we'll get into breaking down that matchup as well. Some of the audio we didn't get to from Sark, we'll get back to that too. Previewing the Aggies, we'll also dive into that matchup, the X factors, the X's and O's as well. We'll also talk about some NFL news notes and nuggets. We'll get to the Texans, who will have a game versus Jacksonville coming up this weekend. We'll talk about the Cowboys, their matchup versus the Giants, give you kind of an injury update. Cowboys got some injury concerns, but we'll talk about that coming up later on in the show. Also, the Longhorns, there are congratulations in order. There are multiple players who are finalists for national awards. We'll talk about that here actually in the first segment and talk about what is the likelihood of the Longhorns bringing some hardware to the 40 acres to claim their spot as the best players in the country at their specific positions. We'll get into that coming up. Also, your usual favorites on the show. We got what the facts, what the stats. We got the topic for the big fat poll today. Who said that off the record? We are loaded on the hump day edition of the Rodcast as usual. Before we do any of that, let's introduce you to the rest of the crew. He's one of the hardest working members of the ARN family. Got a hustler spirit, period. Not sure what he's paid, but pretty damn sure the man is underpaid. Ain't no 401k for this hustler, and he's a hustle man of many talents. It's our friend, co-host, and neighbor. It's Patrick Davis, y'all. What's going on, Patrick? How you doing, brother?
I'm doing good. Ready to get it going here on a Wednesday. Ready to enjoy some Thanksgiving coming up tomorrow and just enjoy a little not waking up at 4 a.m. and, you know. And
yeah.
I think I have a Friendsgiving tonight. So go hang out with some friends and do that.
I remember those.
Go hang out and, you know, we'll see how that goes. It's it should be good. It's
catching up with some friends.
Soup thing, which apparently is a thing that some people do, where everybody brings a soup.
Soup? It ends up being like a potluck or something like that anyway, right?
Yeah, it kind of does. But I think it's because they're like, well, there's already people are going to have Thanksgivings on Thursday, and they're having
you don't have a lot of food.
So you're not going to have turkey 2 days in a row because turkey is not.
And you don't want anything too heavy before Thanksgiving. Yeah.
You don't want to have a full Thanksgiving and then go to your families and be like, not as good, family.
No, the soup thing actually makes sense when you think about what, because it's such a, I mean, obviously you just gorge yourself on food. I mean, you just, it's gluttony. It's a holiday about gluttony. So I understand the soup thing as a pre, like for the pre-Thanksgiving, that actually kind of makes sense now that you said it. I'm like, actually, I don't want to eat a heavy meal before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. So it's and I think that's like, you can just get a bunch of different, there'll be multiple soups. I don't think I'm bringing a soup because I'm not a soup maker.
You're not a soup guy?
I've never made a soup in my life.
Oh, from scratch?
No.
Yeah,
never
that's
have.
Tough. I've never made soup from scratch. Now, that's a good point, though. I've tried to make, gumbo's not really soup, but I've tried to make gumbo.
Yeah, like gumbo,
soup, no.
Chili, you can kind of go into.
Chili, but it's not a soup,
it's
so you're right.
Soup.
I don't think I've ever made soup from scratch.
No.
My wife makes a really good tortilla soup from scratch. Okay. It's fantastic.
So she can make it. But I'm like, I don't make one, so I just go to the store and buy soup, which seems kind of not the point.
Any rational human being does, otherwise.
So I probably would not bring soup, but they're like, we just bring something else to snack on, so I got to find something else that I'll get to snack on.
Something that goes with soup.
I don't know. I'll figure out something. And bring something.
Yeah. Bread always goes with soup. Soup and bread.
There you go. You know what I mean? Just that $1.
Bring the salad.
That $1
soup
bread.
Salad.
That $1 bread from H-E-B. Don't bring that up.
Hey, man. I like that bread from H-E-B.
I get my bread from
H-E-B.
No, but I'm looking for it. I was trying to say that my favorite soup that I drink is whiskey and ice and Coke put into a, you know, and then just drink. That's my favorite.
I was going to say, you don't drink soup, but there you go.
Yeah, you drink that soup.
Yeah, you do.
That's the soup I normally have. So we'll see how that goes. But I'm looking forward to that tonight and then a big Thanksgiving. I hope everyone's going to have a lot of fun over this holiday. Let me introduce my co-host. He's a proud alumni of DBU. He's got more papers than Dunder Mifflin and watches more film than Siskel and Ebert. He is the new Rod Father of Austin Sports Radio, Mr. Rod Babers.
I appreciate the intro, brother. Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's a glorious holiday, Thanksgiving is. It really is fantastic. It's because now it's just down to some of your favorite things, just football, lots of food. You get to take a nap is almost part of the culture of the holiday.
Yeah.
Like, that's beautiful. Like, nobody's going to judge you about taking a nap. You almost expect it to just go run off somewhere and take a nap. And then you got football, and when one of the games is just a dud, you're like, all right, well, time to go take a nap somewhere. And then wake up to eat more food again. And then, oh, it's just a beautiful thing. The family, actually, the family may be probably one of the things that's most stressful about the holiday. The football and the food is awesome. Then the family's great. And then, of course, there's going to be some stress with the family.
No,
The
family one is always interesting because I'll have people that don't watch football really much at all. And then they'll be watching a game, but then trying to talk to you like they watch football.
Yeah.
And so they'll just, and like the rule changes happen. So if you haven't really watched a game and then someone maybe or maybe doesn't catch a ball and they're like, that's a catch. And you're like, well, actually, I hate to break this to you. I'm just telling you what's going to happen. We can have this semantics argument about what a catch is. Just telling you, they're not going to call that a catch.
Yeah, they just you just told on yourself. You ain't watched football in a minute. That's okay. That's okay. You ain't gotta fake it with the family. That's good.
No,
just admit you don't watch it, and that's it's all good. Not a big deal. But we'll get to some of those Thanksgiving games. But no, it's one of my favorite holidays, just because all about football, all about good food. How do you guys cook your turkey? I'm always interested to know the new age.
I think we have two. I think we do two now.
Oh, good for you guys.
And so
you
I got think we have multiple like options. One that's in the smart. Oven, and then my dad smokes one.
That's smart. See, that's smart. Because I always say that's crucial because you got so many people.
Yeah.
So many different types of palates and tastes. Like, if you don't do the turkey right, and you know, and half the group really doesn't like that kind of turkey, I'm glad you guys do too.
So I think, we do the normal, regular oven turkey, and then my dad will smoke one as well. He got a new smoker, so he's all excited about it. He's been practicing getting ready for it. We had to smoke some other things.
We're smoking Cornish game hens.
Yeah, exactly.
Just smoking little small chickens.
No, I went up to see him. Which happy birthday, my mom. I went to go see my parents last weekend, and that was he had some turkey, like a smaller turkey he had made to smoke to try, and Lou was enjoying. My dog Lou was enjoying very much that he just had all this leftover turkey that he was like, well, you just need to. You got to get rid of it, man.
It's an experimental turkey, all right? This is not even the real thing. I was just experimenting with this one. Oh, man, I love it. That's good stuff. All right, yeah, so we'll talk a lot about Thanksgiving, of course, because everybody's looking forward to it. Hope you guys are looking forward to it as well and having a great Thanksgiving. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll get to the Horn headlines, and then we'll talk about the finalists. There are two finalists that have been announced. Congratulations are in order for these two Texas players who have been announced as finalists for national awards. And actually, both have a really good chance to win it. There is also a ridiculous snub we must discuss as well on the national award watch list. So, of course, we'll talk about the Longhorns. We've got some love, but I do think that was a snub, and I'm surprised about this one. But maybe there's a caveat. We'll get to that. Also, the college football playoff rankings came out last night. Not much has really changed for the Longhorns, and a lot of the mysteries out of it for the Longhorns now, too, in terms of the college football playoff. The projections are, you know, even if Texas loses, which they won't, I hate even saying it, they won't to the Aggies, but even if they did, worst case scenario, most people believe and most of the prognosticators believe Texas still will get in. So for Longhorn fans, it's kind of lost the appeal of following the college football playoff rankings every week.
I mean, you can still watch it and see who else is going to be there. And you know, you have to kind of know what's up because, you know, you'll get barraged by the fans of other teams.
Just hating on your schedule.
the fact that you paid millions of dollars to move into the toughest conference in football and scheduled the defending national champions, and somehow it's your fault that the schedule wasn't good enough.
Hey, man. Remember, all of a sudden, the SEC is all of a sudden a weak league when Texas is in it. I'm like, hold up, when did that happen? I thought, hold up. Hold up, just like, it's just crazy how the narrative shifts. It's like, hold up, so you're telling me 6 months ago Texas wasn't ready for the SEC and they was going to get a hell of a shock when they got to the SEC. And, man, watch, it's going to be really an eye-opening experience. Reality's going to slap you in the face. And then Texas goes into the SEC and now all of a sudden the SEC is down, except for Georgia. Because of course they lost to Georgia. It's like, no, except for Georgia. So it's crazy. I'm with you. I don't really understand it either.
I get everyone's going to make their own case, but this is the whole point of the playoffs. This is why there's an expanded playoffs, because you could be mad about Texas' schedule if there was a 14 playoff.
You can be mad about it if they had lost to one of those teams.
No, I agree. But if there's a
like
14
the only team they lost to was the good team on the schedule.
No, but
which
I'm saying
Georgia.
If there's a 14 playoff, then you can start to say, well, I don't think they're the top four teams in the. But they're definitely one of the top 12.
Yeah, but their argument is they're not one of the top four. Right? Their argument is that they should be ranked as high because they haven't played anybody. It's like, well, I get what you're saying.
But no one has at the top.
That doesn't matter at this point. They have, with the teams they've played, they've beaten those teams.
But, yeah.
And beaten most of them by double digits. And the only good team, I agree, the only really good team they played is Georgia. They lost to Georgia. But, I mean, I really don't know the argument most other opponents want to have is if Texas had lost one of those games, then I think you have a valid argument that Texas is not one of the best four teams.
Yes.
But they didn't lose any of those other games.
No,
they only
no.
lost to the really good team they played, which is Georgia.
No, no, I'm more thrown off in the fact that no one at the top has really played this super hard schedule that they seem to be wanting everyone to have played.
Ohio State is kind of the one because they played Oregon now and they played
Indiana. And they lost
Indiana.
Oregon.
And they, like, trust me, I agree.
They beat an Indiana team that hasn't played anybody.
Trust me, I agree with you. I think it's all about beating the teams on your schedule.
I agree. You know, I mean, that's why, like, that's what we're supposed to see is a 12-team playoff is, okay, so well, we now go win the games in the playoffs.
Yeah,
and if Texas is really going to be exposed, they'll be exposed in the playoffs. It's not a 4-team playoff where, well, these three teams are getting screwed now because they were better and they played a tougher schedule, but it's not going to happen anymore. So,
or they'll be exposed versus the Aggies.
Yeah.
If the Aggies are indeed a good team, they're ranked. They'll be, what, ranked 20th or something like that?
Yeah.
If the Aggies are a good team, then the Aggies will expose them, which I know most of y'all agree they won't expose them. Because the Aggies have had their own issues, right, being consistent, especially the last two SEC teams that they've played. Because it's not easy to beat all the teams on your schedule, even if you consider them weaker opponents. It's not easy to go 10-1 through the first 11 games.
No.
It ain't, trust me. I tried my best, and I was on the 40 acres. We won 11 games 2 years in a row. It is not easy. And go look at some of them games. They were way closer than they needed to be versus Oklahoma States of the world and Iowa States of the world. Hey, I get it. All right, you want to blow all the teams out, but it's just like the late, great Al Davis will say, just win, baby.
Oh, man.
And it's really hard to do that. Look around the country. Look what happened to Ole Miss last week. Look what happened to Bama last week. It's tough to do it, man. I'm not going to say the Tom Herman quote. All right. I'm not going to say it, but y'all know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, I will say this.
It ain't easy. I would say it ain't easy. I know they would say it's hard, but I can say it ain't easy.
And what's crazy is the Big 12 is also on the verge of disaster, that there is a chance the Big 12 doesn't make the playoff.
Yeah.
Because
it's cannibalizing itself.
Arizona State is 16, I believe, and Tulane is 17. If Arizona State gets knocked out and no one is above Tulane, it does not say a Power 4 school has to be in. All Power 4 schools have to be in it. It just says the best five conferences. So Tulane would then jump the Big 12, and the Big 12 would fall out of the playoffs completely. It is a crazy concept that could actually happen, that they have cannibalized themselves enough because BYU fell apart at the end of the season.
Yep.
That
Colorado was supposed to make that run, then they got beat.
They got beat by Kansas. Yeah, so that is a crazy concept to say that you walked away from that is now in. That's a horrible, horrible thing for a conference if you're supposed to be a Power Four and you don't make a 12-team playoff.
Yeah, that'd be Brett Yarmark's nightmare.
Yeah.
That would be that's a nightmare scenario for Brett Yarmark. In the first year that Texas and Oklahoma leave, you lose your blue bloods, and then you fail to make the 12-team playoff. That would set a horrible precedent.
Yes.
For the Big 12. So I'm actually hoping that doesn't happen. You know what I mean? I still got some sentimental connection to the Big 12, so I'm hoping they still connect it. They probably need to restructure the format of the playoffs anyway whenever they expand it and just give the power – the Power Four conference champion just a guaranteed spot in, which I think they will. But yeah, because to avoid what you're talking about, which yeah,
I think they thought that was going to be the case, because they thought, but well, there's never going to be a point where the best
six,
team, the group of six will have two teams better than the worst, the best team in a Power Four. And yet, but that is close right now. It's very close.
That's a great point. Yeah. No, I didn't think about that, but no, you're right. Yeah, and that's the – yeah, because honestly, it's the truth is, and I hate to say it, they don't really have a power in that conference. Like, there's no – you know what I mean? There's no blue blood in the conference, but then there is no elite team really in that. Like, I'm talking about, there's no elite team in college football. I'm talking about there is no apex predator, I would say.
Yeah.
In the Big 12. Like, any of the Big 12 teams can be taken down, it seems, by like some of the middle tier Big 12 teams. In the SEC, that's kind of the conversation we're just having. That's not really the case. There seems to be a clear upper tier of upper echelon of the SEC and the Big 10.
Yes.
And then there's a significant drop off.
Like, yeah, ACC Texas has some teams at the top two, and then a lot of bottom dwellers that you can just knock out.
So you can make the argument that parity in the Big 12 is actually going to hurt them.
Yes. I mean, parity in the SEC's hurt them.
Tell it to Ole Miss. Ole Miss will make that argument. Bama will make that argument.
There should be five or six SEC schools, and there's not going to be, because some of these teams are going to get pushed out because they just lost three games.
Yeah, that's too many games to lose. Texas, you can say what you want about the schedule. I actually agree with you about the Texas schedule being weak. Still, at this point in the season, 10-1 gets rewarded, because it's really tough at this point in the season at any level of football, actually.
Yeah, it is.
To win 10 games through 11. Look around the country. How many teams have done it? It's just really rare and tough, no matter what level and no matter what competition level. That's a week-to-week consistent thing. So Texas is one of the top four teams in the country. I truly believe that. Have they been tested and passed every test? No. Because the test was Georgia, and they didn't necessarily pass that test. But we'll see. They'll get that chance again. And they'll get their chance versus A&M. I think that'll be a tough game for the Longhorns on the road, the way the Aggies are, the way the Aggies are approaching that, from the fan perspective and from the team perspective. All right, so let's talk about that. We'll get into that. We'll also get back to the college football playoff rankings, give you those. We'll also look into the national award finalists for the Longhorns. You got two of them, so congratulations to those guys. We'll talk about it, all of that and more. But first, let's get educated, updated, and informed with all the top stories of the day with Patrick Davis and the Horn Headlines.
All right, your Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the NBA, the Rockets beat the Timberwolves 117-111 last night, pushing their cut play record to 3-0. Fred VanVleet had 27 points and 11 assists, and Alperen Şengün added a triple-double. The Spurs won their fourth straight game, 128-115 over the Jazz, with Victor Wembanyama putting up 34 points in the game. Tonight, the Spurs are back in action against the Lakers. The Mavericks welcome Jalen Brunson and the Knicks, and the Rockets take on the struggling 76ers. In college basketball, number 1 Kansas held on 75-72 to hand number 11 Duke their second loss of the season. Unranked Colorado handed number 2 UConn their second straight loss in a row, 73-72. And number 20 Texas A&M lost their second game of the season to an unranked Oregon team, 80-70. In college football, the latest playoff rankings were released, with Texas remaining at number 3. Indiana dropped to number 10, and Arizona State now sneaks in as the final team. Clemson, Alabama, and Ole Miss are on the outside looking in at 12, 13, and 14, respectively. And that is your Horn Headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn Headlines. All right, really quickly, we were just talking about the college football playoff rankings, but here are your latest top 12. You have Oregon at number 1, Ohio State at 2, the Longhorns at 3, Penn State 4, Notre Dame 5, Miami 6, Georgia's at 7, Tennessee 8, SMU 9, Indiana's at 10, Boise State 11, and you have Clemson at 12, Alabama 13, and Ole Miss at 14 on the latest college football playoff rankings. And then your seeding, which is different than your rankings. The byes, or at least the top 4 seeds who get the bye: Oregon 1, Texas 2, Miami 3 and Boise State 4. Getting back to what Patrick was talking about the Big 12 kind of getting shafted in this thing. And also your first round games would be your 5 versus 12 is Ohio State versus Arizona State. Your 6 versus 11 would be Penn State versus Indiana. Your 7 versus 10 would be Notre Dame versus SMU. And your 8 versus 9 would be Georgia versus Tennessee. And that would be right now, the way things stand, that would be the bracket as it stands. So the Aggies are ranked number 20 in this latest ranking. So the Longhorns, that will be a number 3 versus a number 20 matchup coming up this weekend, which we will talk a ton about, obviously, all throughout the show. We'll get into that and get play some more of the audio. We didn't get to all of the audio from yesterday from Sark. I want to get to some more of that. Him talking about the quarterback for the Aggies, Marcel Reed, who will be a bit of a challenge for them to corral. We'll talk about that. But let's first give some props to a couple of Longhorns who – were announced as finalists for national awards. Jadae Barron, as we thought, I mean, no surprise there. He is indeed a finalist for the Thorpe Award. And Malachi Starks, who is the senior safety from Georgia. Caleb Downs is the safety out of Ohio State. Remember, he's the guy that he's the safety that transferred from Alabama. Really good player. Honestly, the way it's looking just right now, Jadae Barron seems like the obvious winner. I don't want to be cocky about this thing, and I'm sure the committee's got their own criteria. But if you look at, you know, tackles, overall tackles, I mean, two guys are safety, so you're talking about different positions, so different overall impact on the game. But if you want to look at statistical comparison, tackles, Jadae Barron would be second. Caleb Downs has got 50, so he's got 41. Solo tackles, he's got 27. That's second behind Caleb Downs is 29. Tackles for loss, he's got 2, but Caleb Downs has 6.5, and Malachi Starks has 4. So he's, as a safety, as a corner and not a safety, you would expect that to be the case. PBUs, though, he's got the clear advantage. He's got 8 passes broken up. Malachi Starks has 2. Caleb Downs has 3. So he's got more than both of those guys combined. Interceptions, he's got 4. Malachi Starks has 1. Caleb Downs has 0. So he's got more interceptions than both of those guys combined. And completion percentage allowed, he's at 57%. Malachi Starks is at 61%. Caleb Downs at 70%. And touchdowns allowed, he's allowed 0. Same as Caleb Downs and 1 fewer, of course, than Malachi Starks. And coverage yards allowed, he's allowed 200. That would be second fewest among these finalists because Caleb Downs has allowed 123. It would seem to me that not only does he have a pretty good case, that seems like he should be the favorite. I haven't looked. I'm sure there's some odds out there, Vegas odds. I don't know what they are, but based on the stats and based on the big game performances too, I'm sure those other guys. But you know, Jadae got 2 picks in the Georgia game. That was a big game for Texas. They didn't win. I get that. But that was still a big game for him. And nationally televised, everybody's watching. And he made a really good play. And, you know, I think that play that he made in the Arkansas game and the play that he made in the Colorado State game, I believe it was, early on in the season, they're nice highlight reel plays. Like, they're just great. I mean, they'll be on his draft highlight. Guaranteed, both of those picks will be on his draft highlight reel tape when he's drafted, and they'll play it because they're great splash highlight plays. And as a DB, you need those too because those will be played when they play the highlights of Texas and the big plays on SportsCenter, and they go through the quick, you know, 15-second review of it. They play those big plays, and as a DB, it's crazy to say that. You know, you as it need to be any position. If you're going to be up for a national award, those members of that committee who vote on that award, they're all over the country. They're everywhere. All right, they're not watching all the games. You know, I'm sure there's some requirement, or I'm sure there is probably some expected, you know, amount of due diligence you're supposed to do. They ain't watching all them games. They watch the highlights and they hear the names and they go, oh, this guy's a good player. And they start to hear that name more and more, and they vote for that guy. All right, and that's, I think, for Jadae Barron, it's going to help him because I'm sure that some of those plays have been mentioned before in highlights of Texas and why this defense is so good. Oh, he's the best player on the defense or one of the best players on the defense. and he's been around a while. So I think the senior thing, we talked about that, how that hurt Anthony Hill with the Butkus Award. It's helping Jahdae Barron because he's been around for a long time. And sometimes these things end up being kind of career achievement awards, which is not cool. It shouldn't be that. But sometimes that ends up being the case. So I actually think Jahdae Barron's going to win it. I'm not just saying that because I want it to happen. I'm a little biased. But I actually think he's going to win it. Now, I will say Travis Hunter not being selected as a member of the – as a finalist for the Thorpe Award. And I don't know how many they can throw out there. And, Patrick, I'll send you – actually, I meant to do this. I'll send you some Sound of Dion. I just sent it, Sound of Dion, because Dion was not happy.
I get it.
Travis Hunter should have been – I said initially it's going to come down to Travis Hunter and Jahdae Barron.
Yeah.
I said those two guys will definitely be finalists. I cannot believe the one who didn't make it was Travis Hunter. Talk about hype and promotion and marketing. I mean, this guy's up for the Heisman because of his elite ability at corner and at safety. He's going to get drafted into the NFL in the top 5-10 picks as the top probably corner off the board or athlete off the board. He's in the NFL, they want him to play corner. He wants to play both. He says he's going to play both in the NFL. And whatever team drafts him early on will allow him to play both. It's just, you know, not at the rate he's doing right now. Literally going starting both ways. Like, he's not going to do that. He's going to do it sparingly, situationally. He's going to play offense. Or, hell, who knows? He might sparingly or situationally play defense, but he's not going to go both ways in full time like he's doing right now. But, man, I'll look at his stats. I mean, he's got 2024. He's got one interception. They don't throw it to him a lot, by the way. So he's got 3 interceptions. He's got 1 forced fumble on the season. You know, 30 tackles, 9 pass deflections of PBUs. Man, his stats are better than – Jahdae Barron is the only one who has better stats than he does among these finalists. I think he's got better stats than Caleb Downs, got better stats than Malachi Starks. I think he's a better player than Malachi Starks. I think he's a better – Caleb Downs is a really good player. But I think you could argue he's as good a player, if not a better player, than all of the finalists.
I would assume that the voting committee either basically took that you had to be a top team – a top 10 team to be in there because that all the guys are on there, that some of the people that you see, the missions that people don't like are teams that are not ranked as high, which I don't know if you should for an award like Thorpe, rule out bowl eligible teams that have really good players. I don't think it should be their fault.
That's crazy.
That they're, you know, maybe their team isn't as great. So they can't play offense except for Travis Hunter. But I don't know. I was with you. I thought Travis Hunter was for sure going to be one of the finalists in this. And Jahdae Barron's main competition. But, yeah, I don't know why. I would have to assume it's because there's some backlash against Colorado and Dion and that program.
Maybe you're right.
That whoever's voting may be anti that, or at least enough people voting were anti that they just left him off because they felt they didn't like it. Or they don't like two-way players. Or they don't like whatever reason they don't like.
Whatever he represents or whatever. Yes. Yeah, I'm with you. I guess they say, man, we don't want to give it to a guy who's not fully devoted to one side of the ball. Or like you said, whose impact isn't on a really good team or a great defense. Something like that. Maybe they think that an elite corner or elite DB should translate to an elite defense. And these are all defenses that are among the best defenses in the country, Georgia, Ohio State, and Texas. That could be it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's a travesty. No. No pun intended there. But, I think that's crazy. And the guy's going to get drafted ahead of all those players. So the NFL is like, oh, no, we think you're the best defensive back in college football.
Yeah, exactly.
the Thorpe Award doesn't even deem you worthy to be a finalist for the award for the best defensive back in college football.
It's a problem where these awards are great. I don't want to diminish the awards at all, but there is always a problem of things that are voted on that you can tell there is no straight, you know, criteria.
Yeah.
It is kind of, there is a judgment call on all of this. And sometimes if you don't like it, and I mean, it could come down to some of the guys in there just thought, well, everybody else will vote for him, so I won't. I'll pick somebody else who's more deserving. Hey. and he just gets left off because everybody thought everybody else was going to vote for him number one. And I don't know. I'm also curious when they're going to do the final vote. I'm assuming it'll be after this week. But if you were if you put in the SEC championship game, that also changes things because that is a Georgia versus Texas likely matchup again. So that would change the way voting goes in the final. So I'm curious to see when they vote. But, yeah, I think leaving Travis Hunter out is not great. And I think it sucks for whoever wins it, too, that you didn't get to say I won over Travis Hunter.
Yeah, agreed.
I think that would be better.
Yes, I totally agree with you. If I'm Jhade Barron, I'm like, man. Because I think Jhade Barron's got a really – he'd had a good case to beat Travis Hunter no matter what. Travis Hunter, you know, like I said, I think they had some agenda, and it must have been either, you know, he wasn't playing going elite defense, or but Patrick said he's not on a team that's, you know, winning a lot of games or a championship contender, or maybe they don't like the fact that he's not fully devoted to defense. I have no idea, but that seemed like, to me, that was a dang coaching mistake. Can we hear from Deion here? And he was asked about it, because you know Deion has something to say about his what he deems as a son to him, basically, is what he said about Travis Hunter, his player not being named as a Thorpe Award finalist. He himself, who has a Thorpe Award at his house, he's got the hardware. Listen to what Deion had to say.
Something that just transpired and they brought to my attention today that Travis is a finalist for the Walter Camp Player of the Year, Maxwell Player of the Year, Bednarik Defense Player of the Year, Blitnikoff Best Receiver, regardless of position, and was snubbed by the Thorpe. How? How is Travis Hunter snubbed by the Jim Thorpe Award? You can have my award. You can have it back. Matter of fact, I'm going to give him mine. I ain't using it. It's just sitting up there collecting dust. So Travis could have my Thorpe Award, because if this ain't the most idiotic thing in college football, that he's not a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, and he is, I would say arguably, but I don't think it's really an argument about this young man being the best defensive back in college football. I ain't saying nothing about the receiver part of it. I'm just talking about defensive back. He rarely gets thrown at. He's won a game for tackling for us, and he's always on point. So if you bring up the statistics, I don't know how in the world is Travis Hunter not a finalist for the Jim Thorpe Award. They just pretty much messed up all the integrity of the award, and he could have mine. Whoever's voting down there, who's ever bringing it home, thank you, because I don't even want mine now. God bless you.
So Deion says he's going to give him his, so he'll get one anyway. I didn't realize he was a finalist for all the other awards that he brought up. But, yeah, maybe that's why they didn't do it.
I know, it was just that simple. I think
he's getting too much love.
I get that. I still think he should have been a finalist. And just don't give him the award. Just let him be a finalist, though, because it takes away from everybody else when you don't. Like, I think that's a bit of an overstatement from Deion, that the award doesn't mean anything.
It's Deion. It's Deion.
Yes. But at the same part, you go, yeah, he should be a finalist, because then it means more when you beat him.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think you did, like you said, you do take away from the credit. I think you take away from the credibility of the award itself. When everybody was like, oh, he was drafted like top five as a corner, and then he wasn't, you know, as finalist for the award for best defensive back. Like, that's a bit crazy.
No, and I mean, if we want to go back, it's clearly different voting, but if we want to look back at probably the last great two-way player, Charles Woodson is where I'm going to go, the last great.
And he didn't do it full-time. He did it situationally, sparingly.
Right? 97 Thorpe Award winner. He won the Thorpe. So I'll just say that was the one I went back to look at and go, did he win it? Or is it they don't want to give it to a two-way player?
What about Champ? Because Champ Bailey did the same thing. Champ Bailey was playing two ways. I think Champ Bailey had to win the Thorpe, didn't he? Well, I don't say had to, but you think he was going both ways a little bit. They threw Champ Bailey out there. I remember that too. So I wondered if Champ Bailey won the I don't know why you would be anti Travis Hunter because of his two-way ability, but that's just crazy. And yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I don't think he deserved to be a Biletnikoff Award finalist. That's the one I would question. That's why I'd be like, nah, I don't know if he should be a Biletnikoff Award finalist. There's a lot of really good receivers out there.
Yeah.
In college football. I think he is one of the top defensive backs in college football. Wide receiver, I'm not sure he's one of the top three best wide receivers in college football. I'm not sure about that. And I don't know if the stats would back that up either. But he is. I mean, he's legit, though. He's really one of the best wide receivers. I think he may be top best cover corner right now in college football. I think he's a little bit better of a cover corner than Jahdae Barron is. I think, you know, Jahdae Barron, I think, is a great DB. He's fantastic. I think he's going to win the Thorpe. But if you're taking guys who can get straight out cover, just a flat out man covers defender, I think Travis Hunter is probably a little bit more elevated than Jahdae is. It's a straight up man coverage guy. Just play bump and run, corner, no help, leave him out there on an island.
Champ Bailey was a finalist, did not win.
Hey. Exactly. At least he should have been a finalist. Yes. That's all we're saying. Nobody said he should have won. I want Jahdae Barron to win. I think he should win. But a finalist, not a finalist? I don't know. I think that's a bit crazy. Strange. All right, we'll come back. We'll get into some Texas football conversation. We'll talk Texas A&M, start to preview that matchup and dive into the X factors in the Texas A&M game and hear Sark's thoughts about their opposing quarterback, Marcel Reed. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
And they were all asking themselves the same question. What is behind that curtain?
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into some Texas A&M conversation. You know, one thing, you know, the Aggies have a good defense. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they got NFL players on that defense. Nick Skirton, Shamar Stewart, Shamar Turner. I mean, those guys. I like York, the linebacker for them. I think he's a good player. He's going to play on Sundays. I mean, they got really good players on defense. They don't play, at least lately, they haven't necessarily been playing great defense. Like, they got good players on defense, yet lately that defense has been a bit leaky for them. And so I don't want to be overconfident going into this game. So the X factors in this game are those players for the Aggies. Could they potentially have their best games of the season? Which that is not – they have not been trending that way, all right, for the Aggies. And which we'll get into that because their last two SEC games, I think, leaves a lot to be desired defensively. You can make the argument they're trending the wrong way. And Quinn's ankle. Those are your those combined, right? You look at their ability to rush the passer, their ability to win one-on-ones because they got, like I said, guys that are going to play on Sundays on that side of the ball. Against the Texas offensive line, who's playing their best brand of football right now, I think, coming off that game versus Kentucky, where they were able to impose their will in the run game, and they had that drive in the fourth quarter where they ran it 15 times in a row, when their quarterback could barely move. The only thing he could do was turn around and hand it off. And your, you know, most explosive ball carrier couldn't hold on to the football. So you were limited in a lot of options, and you had to just lean on your offensive line, and your offensive line led the way for Texas. Can they do that on the road? Does that travel? Can you pack that travel? Can you pack that up and take that to Aggieland? That's going to be the question against this front. And I wonder if they'll be able to run the ball. If Texas can run the ball versus A&M, then, man, that's going to be all she wrote. Because I do think it depends on looking at Quinn's injury. And that's the thing. Are they going to protect Quinn? And we don't know the severity of the injury. It was a mild ankle sprain. How mild? What's their definition of mild? And the Aggies, if they get to Quinn a couple of times, you know, does he get aggravated? Does he re-injure it? You know, and what's the – how long does it take before it makes him less effective? Before it starts to have an adverse effect on him. The Aggies got 195 pressures as a defense. That's top 20. And like I said, they have NFL players in their front seven. Like, guys, there's no doubt guys that are going to play on Sunday. It's, I don't think they got more NFL players than Michigan. So we've seen Texas play against the defense with NFL players. Georgia, of course. but that didn't go the way Longhorn fans would have wanted. But we've seen them go up against, you know, NFL caliber players and still have their way offensively with them. Here's the thing, though, about the Texas A&M defense. It's trending the wrong way in their last two SEC games against South Carolina and against Auburn. I went back. I mean, I don't know if you guys got a chance to watch that Auburn game. That defense looked like they were either tired or guys were just out of their gaps, or guys getting pushed back. And that's not a good sign going up against Texas, coming off their best rushing effort of the season. Jaquez Hunter, who's a really good running back for Auburn, 130 yards. No, he had 4.6 yards a carry, so it wasn't. And they went to, you know, four overtimes in that game. But it was more the explosive plays they gave up in the passing game that I saw. You guys know I'm always looking at the explosive plays. Cam Coleman had 128 yards receiving. Kendre Lambert Smith had 104 yards receiving. And he did that on just two catches. He had two catches for 104 yards. So explosive plays. And Cam Coleman's just a man. I mean, at the catch point, that dude's a freak. I think he's 6'3", but he plays like he's 6'6" out there. And he had two touchdowns. Just a man in the red zone. So they ran the ball with some success, but it was really what the run game set up some shots downfield where the Aggie DBs were out of position or eyes in the wrong place. And then you go to the South Carolina game, their last SEC game prior to the Auburn game. And, man, South Carolina ran the football really well. Raheem Sanders had 144 yards. Now, both of those teams do have somewhat of a dual threat quarterback, or at least a plus one in the running game with their quarterback. Lenora Sellers also went off against the Aggies for 106 yards. But, once again, I thought it was the plays in the pass game. They allowed one receiver had four receptions for 132 yards. Chunk yardage plays. Big chunk yardage plays. And sometimes they have trouble tackling in the open field. They did against North Carolina because Raheem Sanders not only had the 20 rushes, but he had five receptions for 92 yards. Those are, to me, bad. That's a bad matchup for the Aggies if they're now starting to become leaky on the rush defense, which, you know, I'm sure will be better in this big game at home. Leaky in their rush defense, and they're giving up chunk yardage plays now in the back end, too. And Texas is starting now round into form with their run game. At least that's what we saw versus Kentucky. The hope is that travels. And, you know, we know Sark can get explosive plays. Either you could go downfield to get them in the passing game, or you can get them in yak opportunities underneath. The big X factor that we cannot account for is how severe is the mild ankle sprain for Quinn, and how does it hamper him or hinder him? And if it does, then all of this kind of changes. And does Sark try to protect him, protect that ankle with the run game early on, which is also something that is uncharacteristic of Sark. The truth is, in Sark, in big games, man, in most games, but definitely in big games, Sark leads with the pass. He's a pass-first guy. He wants to close with the run. But in big games, that's especially the case. Think about Michigan. Think about Bama. Think about Oklahoma. Big games, think about what they're doing on big games. Comes out throwing the football. Now, if Quinn's ankle is fine, then, of course, that's exactly the route Texas should go. If his ankle is the mild ankle sprain, you know, if he can't get sufficient power, you know, driving the football downfield, if it, you know, makes him, you know, his off-platform throws inaccurate because he just doesn't have the ability, all right, to get that base, if it affects his mechanics in any way, then maybe you alter the plan. But big games, Sark leads with the pass. There's no doubt. He's going to lead the pass in this game. Just what kind of passing game? Do we see them go down the field a little bit, or is everything underneath like Vanderbilt with Quinn dealing with an injury and they just supplement the offense with extensions of the run game and long handoffs? We shall see versus that Aggie defense. All right, we'll talk more about it, of course, all throughout the show. Continue to break down Texas versus Texas A&M. When we come back, we'll have the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, and we'll also get into the musically themed day of the week right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Davis coming back on the Horn.
Back in the Rodcast on a Wednesday morning, and that means it's a One Artist Wednesday where I'll play music from one artist all show long. And since I can't take a pot shot at the Aggies tomorrow for New Theme Thursday, I'll do it today. This is one of my favorite bands, but the band is The Cult. So as a tribute to our friends in College Station, we'll be listening to The Cult all day long.
I like it. There you go.
A little pot shot at the Aggies there for you on a Wednesday morning.
Beautiful.
I do love, like, the Cult are honestly one of my favorite bands.
You actually like the band.
I do like the band a lot, so it's a fun thing for me to play the music because I do like the band a lot. I've seen them live a bunch of times. But also, it's hilarious to call Aggies a cult. So,
damn right it is.
So
they're proud of it, too.
We'll go with both of those on a Wednesday morning. Let's get to the Big Fat Poll of the Day. Text line's open, 512-447-3776. And we'll get this posted up on X at the Horn ATX.
Patrick's Big Fat Poll of the Day on the Horn.
All right, Big Fat Poll of the Day today. I'm going to give you a couple. I'm going to give you one that we'll put up on X, and then one I want you to throw in on the text line if you've got one for us. But the one we'll throw up on X, who will be the MVP for Texas against Texas A&M? Who will be the MVP? Who is going to be the one to become a Longhorn legend in this rivalry against the Aggies? Here's the four I'm going to put on there because I think these four are going to be important. And I know this is the great thing about Texas here is there's not enough spaces. There's many more that I could put on this list. But I'm going to put on here Quinn Ewers, Trey Wisner,
like that.
Anthony Hill, Jahdae Barron.
Yeah, no doubt.
So that's who I'm going to put on there, is all four guys who could have massive, massive impacts in this game. I know that leads off an Alfred Collins, who could have a huge game. Collins Simmons, this could be the beginning of a great career for him in there. With Isaiah Bond, Matthew Golden could have some huge games in here as well. Gunnar Helm, this could be another one for him.
This game, Malik Muhammad gets finally gets more than three targets in a game.
Well, what's funny is he finally got some the other day, and just because it was a freshman who didn't know not to throw to him.
Yeah, you're right.
That was the only reason we really saw
him. Kept chunking at him. You're right.
He just kind of threw it at him because he was like, oh, well, I don't know that I'm not supposed to, so I'm going to throw it this way.
I wasn't paying attention in prep and in game planning because I didn't think I was going to play.
It was going to play.
I'm just throwing anybody out.
So it could be. But there's so many different names that it could be for this team. But those are the four I'll throw in there. And then I'll throw another one there for you on the text line as well. Who is your favorite Longhorn legend from Texas Tech A&M? Who is the one that when you think of the Aggie, the Longhorns and the Aggies, who's the name that comes to mind for you?
Oh, that's a good one. That is a good question.
Because I know Tuck is going to be on there a lot.
He should be on there a lot.
Because he's the lasting final memory of it.
Yep. I do still remember that. Man, that's a great one, too. Ricky's on there because Ricky had that historic run versus the Aggies. Because I remember that coming up as I was young. Man, Coach stands out when he burnt off on the Aggie secondary. What was that, 08? Well, he burns off on that Aggie secondary like that. Was that 08 or 09? I think it was 08, actually, if I'm not mistaken. I believe. Nope, that was 09. That was 09. I believe, 09, because I think that next game was Sue. Yeah, it was Sue. And he went from, I think, probably on his way to winning to Heisman, maybe. And that's that Ndamukong Suh game. Ndamukong Suh just
killed him.
Man, he put that fire out quick. That was all everybody could talk about was how dominant Ndamukong Suh was, and nobody talked about Colt McCoy's Heisman campaign, which still should have been thriving at the time. But I think it was 09 when I was like, so that stands out. Man, that's got to be a lot of good ones. I remember my favorite memory of that I made in the game. I did block a punt in that 2000. That was 2001, I believe, that I blocked that punt. My man Tony Jeffrey picked it up, ran it back to the house. That was
there
a nice
one. That's a good that one. That's great. A good, nice memory to have there.
That was a great memory. Yeah. Down there in Aggieland, too. That was legit. That was fun. But I'm not – that's a great point. I'm not really sure about – like historically, I'm sure a lot of folks kind of go back to the 80s. And
that's what I'm saying is because I looked up a little research about it, and there's a lot of, there's some moments and there's a lot of games that are really big, but Ricky and Tuck are the two that come up the most probably.
Yeah, that Ricky one was, I could still see him like getting tackled in the end.
Yeah. But I want to see what you guys have on the text line. Throw that in 512-447-3776. Who is your favorite player play? What's your favorite memory when you think of this Texas A&M rivalry? Who's the player and why do they come up for you that you think that's the guy?
Honestly, man, we were just talking about this the other day. That Case McCoy run,
yeah,
in 2011. Remember the run that set up the field goal? They might remember Case McCoy's run. I gotta go look at how long the run. It felt like it was going on for like 30 seconds. It felt like he was running forever. And I just kept waiting. I was like, oh, no, don't do it. And the fact that and there's a great story that is that Jay Hills tells about his experience in that moment, because he was the third down back that was in then. He was like, and so they were in a 2-minute situation, so they put him in as a third down back. And he was in Derrick Case, and he talks about the pre-drive speech by Case McCoy, and then the moment on that play where during the play, essentially, he said he was wide open for the check down and, would have easily gotten the first down and would have been able to, get down with enough time and all that kind of stuff. But he said Case decided, hey, Superman, I'm going to put the cape on in this moment. Everybody was like, no, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because Case is not known for being a dual-threat quarterback. And A&M's defense was pretty good that year. A&M's didn't have a scrub defense. And Case McCoy did it, put the cape on. He always had this irrational confidence, Case had, and it paid off in that moment. He was one thing you say about Case. Case wasn't necessarily an all-time great player. He was as clutch as it gets. He did have the McCoy clutch gene.
He did. We've got a couple on the text line already. The Case McCoys are already thrown in there. I think three after for Case already on there.
I'm telling you, dude. If you remember that run, you're like, no. It's one of those things like, no, oh, yes. And it was. I remember it vividly, like, because I was on the sideline. I was doing sideline reporting. I remember everybody was like, no, don't. And then he just got it done. You got to give Case, of course. I got to go find. I'm going to find out how long that run was, because it felt like he was running forever.
I bet it was like. Watch it again. I haven't seen that play in a long time.
I bet it was like an 11-yard run, but it felt like he was running forever, because he was just, and he wouldn't go down. And I was like, oh, no, don't fumble. And the ball secured. Oh, man, it was crazy. That was a crazy, crazy.
We've also got a Michael Griffin block punt on here. Someone's throwing in there.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Some good.
That was big, too. Hold on. I got the play-by-play here, Texas. I'm going to try to pull it up. Oh, no. Oh, let me see it. All right. I'm trying to find out how long that Ace McCoy run was. Oh, they don't have it here. This is like ESPN. They don't have it going back that far back. I got to go to – I'll go to College Football Reference, and I'll find it. I promise you.
All right. Well, we'll find
how
that.
How long it was.
But that will ask you that. So what is your – what player do you think of? What play do you think of? When you think of this rivalry, and then also our big fat poll today, who will be the MVP for Texas against Texas A&M? Who's going to join the ranks of those other players with a big performance leading Texas to an 11-win season?
Oh, I got mine. I'll tell you on the other side, but I got mine. It's pretty easy, actually. Nod, you set me up for it.
All right.
Yeah.
I like it.
All right, we'll get into that. Topic for the Big Fat Poll today. And we'll also get some of those answers on the text line about the most memorable, iconic players and the moments that really captured your imagination in the Texas A&M game. What player did you associate with that magical moment from the Texas Tech in the game, since we are rekindling the rivalry this coming up weekend. All right, we'll talk about that. We'll also get back to previewing and breaking down Texas Tech A&M. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers. Coming back on the Horn.